This episode is brought to you by Charlotte's Got a Lot. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and host to hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread. Learn more at charlottesgotalot.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
On Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, August 1st, 2018. This is the 186th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a renowned sugar artist and cake designer who now has a new ceramic shop, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. And then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to let your creativity shine. Don't be afraid to experiment and try new things. It's good to think differently and challenge yourself. The world would be a rather boring place if we all just copied one another and didn't try to create and reinvent the wheel just a little bit. So, of course, not every idea or thought that you have may become the next best thing, but you'll never know unless you try. So put the right half of your brain to work and let your imagination run wild. Your signature style is worth expressing. That's my tip today. Now, I'm really thrilled to have my guest here with me in the studio. It's Margaret Braun of Margaret Braun Studio. She is a sugar artist and pioneering cake designer whose work transcends edible media to sculpture, illustration, design, and ceramics. Margaret's boundary-breaking work, which fuses the food arts with the fine arts, has taken her to the Middle East, where she created 2,000 cakes for a royal wedding, to Venice with a tiered sugar mosaic for a masquerade ball, and to a castle in Ireland for a rock star's wedding. Margaret is based in New York, and she had an 8-month residency at the Museum of Arts and Design, where she completed an installation of 2,000 hand-hewn sugar cups. And she is the author of Cakewalk, and her work has been featured extensively in film and print. And there's more. But let's talk to Margaret. So hi.
Hello, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, so nice to see you. Yeah, I think I mentioned this briefly on my last show, how we've known each other a long time and initially met back, I mean, I'm thinking it was like 1998-ish, 99. I assisted you on a photo shoot.
It was a photo shoot
for like Family Circle
or
something?
No, I know exactly what okay. It was. It was for New York Magazine.
Oh, it was for New York Magazine. And that was another shoot I had.
Yeah. Yeah. I was asked to, you know, I'm not really a food stylist, but I had, you know, I can food style to a certain degree, certainly dessert-y stuff. And you know what it was? It was Claudia Fleming's. Wasn't it Claudia Fleming's trifle? It was like a Guinness trifle.
Yes.
And Gillian Duffy was the food editor at the time. The wonderful Gillian Duffy. She's like a legend. And she hired me. And I hired you. Right?
Yes. It was because like I did a brief internship with Gillian Duffy for New York Magazine when I was dabbling in assistant food styling. And I think that's how I got connected to you.
That must be it.
And I just have this vision of you carrying one of your elaborate tiered cakes down the steps of your apartment. And I was like, how does she do this? How does she make the cake? How does she balance? How does she carry it?
Oh, my
God. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's stuck with me forever.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, so that'll be a nice segue when we get to the part where, so you're not really doing cake so much anymore.
Yeah, but we, yes, and we're going to switch to that, and we have a good amount of time to talk, but let's, yeah. I always start with my guest background. I want to know how you got into cakes and sugar and found your voice within the industry.
Well, I became a cake decorator, you know, before the word cake designer even existed, of course, really by accident. I moved into New York to go to art school. Had worked, you know, like washed dishes and waitressed at a few little places on Long Island where I grew up. And needed a job and walked into Saint Ambrose just off the street when this was, and became part of the opening crew for Saint Ambrose up on Madison Avenue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There were a few Americans working there who were, had just graduated from La Varenne. And I was like, I was the kid. I was probably 21. And I was just thrown into an impossible situation and didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I learned how to decorate cakes and learned about Northern Italian pastry is very different than Southern Italian pastry, and learned to speak Italian, and it was crazy. It was
after
just
that job. Wow.
Yeah, and it was to be a part-time job, and then okay, I'll go to art school, but it was just all consuming. I worked 6 days a week, and from 6 a.m. till sundown, and it just enveloped me, and I was enveloped into it. It was great. And I learned a lot.
I was on the Upper East Side a couple of weeks ago, and I went there for an early solo dinner.
I sat right
in the window. I hadn't been there. I hadn't been there. I'd been to other locations, and I was like, I'm due. So, yeah.
Oh, that's the real one.
Yeah.
You know, this was the first gelati in New York, and I think it was probably the first standing espresso bar. You know, all the marble, all the cases, all the pastry cases, all the ovens, all the kitchen equipment came from Milan, and nothing worked for a long time, and and they brought over their crew from Milan, who had kind of grown up there, and everyone had nervous breakdowns, and everyone was sleeping with everyone else and falling apart. It was awesome.
That restaurant life, yeah.
Early in the 80s, it was great. It was very dramatic. It was good.
So you eventually left, or you stayed for a while, and like, when did you start making your cakes?
Well, I learned how to decorate cakes there, that very particular style. And it is a very particular style, and I can say with confidence, having been to Saint Ambrose and the different locations, that I think I'm the only person who really knows how to make them at this point in the States, because they don't look the way they used to be. And I just want to go back in there and
fix them up.
I do.
Yeah.
But so I was there for on and off for a few years, and then I traveled. I was in my early 20s, you know, so I was just kind of a wild young kid and traveled around, and then worked in a bakery in a Zen Buddhist monastery in Yonkers, and worked at Vigneros on 11th Street. And at that point, I was painting, and I had a studio on Canal Street, and then I went to Hunter College, and I was and making art there. And my last job while in a bakery was at Patisserie Lanciani, which...
I don't know that one.
And, you know, it was a great bakery on West 4th between Perry and West 11th, which is right near where I live now. Joe Lanciani was one of these old world Plaza Hotel pastry chefs. He taught me how to pipe. And for those who know my cake decorating, I mean, my strength is a lot. One of my strengths is my piping. I just have this really good hand and I can pipe. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I just am good at it. So, but he taught me. And he, till this day, is the only other person I know who has a really, really, really good hand like that.
Yeah.
But he hates me because, you know, I was young and I left. And so if you're out there, Jill, I love you.
Giving him some credit here, giving him a shout out. That's nice.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of an unsung hero. He kind of disappeared, but I know he's around, but he's a complicated, difficult guy, but so good and wonderful, and I'll always be very grateful to him. Anyway, I'm saying that now because, you know, I've been asked this question before and it's been written about, and for some reason it just never comes up. It just, like, the Jill Lanciani never goes to print. So I'm just Jill Lanciani, Patisserie Lanciani. Jill, I didn't forget about you. Love you.
I love you.
You hate me. I love you. Anyway, okay.
All right. Well, I'm glad. That's and I've learned something. I always learn something on the show.
Yeah.
So sugar objects and working with sugar and finding your style. I mean, did you ever think it was going to become what it has? I mean, you really made like a world impact of influencing other people with your work.
Well, that's nice of you to say. There was never any intention. I've just always kind of made stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was never that person who said, I'm going to be a cake designer, or I'm going to be successful, or I'm going to make money. I just didn't think in those terms. I was just an artist who worked and worked and worked. And cake decorating was great, and I put all my energy into it. And I think that a part of me, well, I know, a big part of me was throughout all my years in working in pastry shops and then making art, having a studio here and there, doing some paintings, blah, blah, blah. I was frustrated. This must be my side job because I was going to be a visual artist. So I think it was frustrating for me to not really be making art, like my friends who were in art school, who had just come out of art school. So I think I just put everything into it. I really just focused all the things I was interested in the visual arts, in terms of design and you know, architecture.
Which are? What were the things you were interested in?
Well, in those days, I was interested in architecture and Islamic art and the Renaissance. I mean, all the basic stuff, all that, like, good art history 101 stuff when you're younger. And but I've always been kind of obsessed with symmetry and technique, really.
Yeah.
So I just put all of my energy into cake decorating and happened to be good at it. And beyond that, it was good for me because I was kind of a distractible person. I still am. I can work really fast and really efficiently and be very focused on a project. But if I'm not really working on something, I can just sort of space out. And so it was good for me. It kind of chilled me out, you know. I probably would have been so pumped up on Ritalin and some other iteration of my life.
I'm thinking, is this why you chose to work with sugar?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that was fun.
For sure.
Because everyone likes sugar and everyone likes cake. And really, I still do. I love cake. I love sugar, and I also don't discriminate. I like bad cake, and I like bad desserts. You know, I really, you know, just give me some coffee cake from the deli, and I'll be your best friend. So, I don't really discriminate. But piping and working with sugar and color. I learned how to paint with food coloring, and
So it's
linear, but it's kind of a woven linear narrative, you know. I don't know. It's woven.
It's woven. It's sugar. It's complicated. It's not complicated.
It's you know, yeah. It's so complicated.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful. It's delicious. Okay. Right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what you've transitioned to from the sugar cake world a little bit now, what you've been working on. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Charlotte's Got a Lot. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts to hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread at Johnson & Wales University. HRN went to this year's symposium to learn about the science, history, and art of bread making. Here's what visitors had to say about the symposium.
I love the geeky science stuff. Great food. Love the Armenian pizza.
How much I'm eating and consuming the carbs.
The most interesting thing is just the community.
For me, it's the science of starters.
So much information.
Very inspiring so far because everybody has a different outlook.
I'm not technically a breadhead, but I think I'm going to be one after being here.
So whether you're a breadhead or just a curious mind, check out HRN On Tour for coverage of Charlotte's International Symposium on Bread and an insider's look into Charlotte's food scene. Don't miss our interview with Peter Reinhardt and Kristen Moore to learn more about where to eat on your next trip to Charlotte, a city on the rise. Learn more at charlottesgotalot.com.
Back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Margaret Braun. She's a pioneering cake designer. She's known a little bit as a sugar queen, can we say? But yeah, and you're doing ceramics now. So I wanted, and your ceramics are unbelievable, so beautiful. Let's get into this museum of art and design, where you were an artist in residency. Is that a good place to kind of, or do you want to, should we back up into kind of like, how did you start to transition into doing ceramics?
I think we can start with that, and I can
okay,
you know, I can just say a few things that are relevant to that. So, I did this 8-month residency at the Museum of Arts and Design, where I made these 2,000 cups out of sugar, out of pastillage. As time goes by, I realize it was, I knew that I was moving away from making cakes because I've said so much in cakes. I've said a lot, you know, I have my book Cakewalk, and I think it was, I kind of did what I needed to do, you know.
Right.
I wanted to change things and raise the bar and make a really personal book about cake decorating that was not a Family Circle book or even a Martha Stewart book, you mm-hmm. know, just something very different, very personal about an artist finding her way through sugar. So, and I think I've done that for now.
Yeah. You certainly have.
And it's great. And so now there are so many cake makers and they're good, you know? And it's really gratifying to see that, you know, that if I've had any influence on them or if they don't know my book and then they do see it, they're like, wow, that's great. It's just really nice. But I'm in a different place in my life now. I think it got to where it started becoming so commercial.
A lot of TV shows on cakes. Yeah. I know you even were a part of judging.
Yeah, I was. Yes, yeah. I was a judge on you know, a few of those shows, and which was fun. But you know, honestly, it's like for me, it was never a sport. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the shows are fun. It's great. I like being on TV. It's really fun. But you know, you're not really talking about the quality of the work because you can't do that on these shows in a realistic way, and I wanted to talk about design. You know, so when I was when I would look at these poor, you know, victims, these contestants, and I would want to talk about really like what this thing looks like, and you know, how is the silhouette, and how could you change? And there's just no room for that. So it just was not. I realized that the conversation was moving away from me, and I thought, okay, you know, this is a good segue. I just need to make art now. I need to kind of recede a little bit from the cake world. Did this installation, and it was, in a sense, it was my swan song to cake making, you know, my goodbye. I mean, for now, maybe not forever, and I will make cakes for special occasions. I will. You know, if it's a really cool project, if it involves traveling to a great place, you know, I'm open to it. But I was just kind of done. I said a lot, and kind of like, you know, let the kids work on it for a while.
Right.
And there's a lot of really good work out there, and there's so many cake makers who are hungry, and they're organized, man. They're like, they've got their business plans and their trajectories, and they would call me and be like, what was your trajectory? I'd be like, I didn't have a trajectory.
I love it.
I don't know. Like, I needed a job, you know? It was like, it was my work. I meant to do other things. It all happened by accident. It was very lucky. So, but the project at the Museum of Arts and Design was fantastic. And, you know, what can I say about it? It was a very personal project, and it was kind of, I hate to use the word meditation because it's so overused, but we're an investigation of just, like, it was about work. It was about my experience having worked in kitchens, the idea of replication and production, making the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, and how that changes, and the challenges that I always had with that. So, because I would always feel like, oh wait, this one is the perfect one, but no, maybe now the next one is even just that much better. And I had a good hand, and they would look great. But I was more interested in the experience of making each piece look different. I'm going into another world now.
I'm following you. Let's. When did you start working with clay?
Well, I was working with clay a little bit. It was before the museum project.
Okay.
At the suggestion of a friend named Kathy Ruttenberg, who is this incredible ceramic artist, who right now in New York, up and down Broadway, I don't know if you've seen them. I think it starts like around Lincoln Center, going up to like 158th Street on the Park and Broadway. She has these full-size sculptures.
I've probably walked by.
They're amazing.
Maybe I haven't. I'm going to observe.
She's just this prolific, incredible artist. She's a friend of mine. She lives upstate. I brought her a sugar cup when she was having a dinner party at her house. And she said to me, have you ever worked with clay? I said, you know, I've been meaning to. You know, she handed me a hunk of clay, and it changed my life. And she said, take a class at Greenwich House Pottery, which is right near my house. So that's what I did. And Greenwich House is so beautiful. And it was a very seamless transition.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very seamless transition because I make ceramics really the same exact way I make cakes, and certainly the sugar cups, which is rolling things out really thin and you know, getting like a general shape and not measuring. I'm kind of obsessed with not measuring because I want them to look like a set, but each have their own life. But I have a good enough hand and a good enough eye that they can look like they are a set.
Just like a chef.
Yeah. And I don't like to measure. I don't like to weigh. So I like to challenge myself. And then I'll, you know, and see how many things I can.
And why porcelain?
Oh, porcelain is nice. Like cream cheese.
Did you test the waters with other types of clays?
I did.
But it was like,
It's like cream cheese. It's porcelain. It actually, probably should know more about this, but it's not considered a ceramic, I think. Well, because it's just very dense. You know, it's white, mm-hmm. obviously, and it's very dense. So it's just so creamy and nice, and it's actually pretty strong. It's very strong. So if it's fired to the right temperature, it's stronger than, say, stoneware or terracotta or other clays.
So, and now you have a new studio in Hell's Kitchen that I've stopped by, and it's awesome. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're doing kitchen type utensils and mm-hmm. cups and things for chefs.
Yeah, I'm still working. I'm working working in a pottery studio that looks like a pottery studio / kitchen because because it's Jim Leahy's place and mm-hmm. he is renting it to me because he's a great guy, and it's right across from the bakery. So there's baking racks. I'm using all my pastry tools, piping with slip.
And you can get a snack very easily.
I know, it's really dangerous. I had a tab. You know?
Oh, really? And then, a house account?
Yeah, and it's just not a good idea. It's not a good idea to just be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get, well, maybe I'll get like two of those cauliflower pizzas. But anyway, so this studio, so we have a mutual friend, Peter Hoffman, who we love.
Yes.
So, and I've known Jim for years, you know, because we're kind of like two really kind of outliers in the food pastry world, artists who kind of
very successful outliers, I would say.
but like, you know, who just became very good at what they mm-hmm. do in not under the most conventional circumstances. Totally different stories, but there is that similarity. So anyway, so I've known him for years, and I know Peter, and so with a friend of mine who this is a long story, I'll cut it short. I was working. I was basically a homeless potter. I was producing too much work to be working in a commercial studio at Greenwich House, which I still will work out. I still do work out of, but I couldn't. I was making too much stuff. I had a friend who had a shop in Soho. Her name is Tulia Madra, and she's a Turkish incredible ceramic artist. She had a shop. Shop closed there. We were looking for a place together. Looked where she could do her work and I could do my work. We wanted to get a big loft space where we could just have a few kilns, do our work, but also do other work because I'm also a designer. I'm doing block printing and I'm drawing. You know, I just mm-hmm. need a space to work. And then I called Peter. I said, Peter, talk to Jim. Ask Jim because he's everything Hell's Kitchen. See what's around there. I'm sure there are spaces. And then Peter did say, well, we do happen to have this little pop-up space now that the cafe is all running.
Mm-hmm. It's perfect.
Jim wants to open a wine bar or an ice cream shop. I was like, no way. I said, Jim, no wine bar, no ice cream shop. Instead, Margaret.
It's worked out.
Yeah, it's great.
A great idea.
And he comes in and makes cups, mm-hmm. and he's so talented. I've
seen some of his things. They're he's really posted. Good. Really good.
So, you know, that's
not
also,
surprised.
No, of course not. And so, you know, that's also the, that's the, and he comes in and he just, like me, he just like works really fast. Our styles are different, but it's interesting. And so it's great. It's been lovely.
I'm so glad. And I know you're working with Legacy Records. Okay.
Yeah.
Which very hot restaurant in Manhattan. What are you doing for them?
Oh, well, God, those guys are so great. It's not in the conventional way because, if you go to Legacy Records,
I've had dinner there once.
So
it was
good.
Delicious.
It's so good.
It's a cool spot.
It's so great.
Yeah.
I love everything about that place. And they're really bold, you know, Ryan and mm-hmm. Grant and Robert, and they like to work with artists. And I've known them from Cake World, obviously, you know, from the food mm-hmm. world from before. Anyway, so blah, blah, blah. So they asked me if I would like to make some pieces for them. So if you go there, you'll see there are these odd pieces around, like big, like, it'll be like a big white bowl and like a big white sort of chalice bowl, which now I call the legacy bowl because I've made a bunch of them. And they have a few of them in these urns. And then they have they have special service pieces basically mm-hmm. that I know they use a lot upstairs for private dining. And then, you'll just see little pieces here and there, yeah. But I like that you know, it's not like splashy, like they just sort of pop up.
Right. Every now and then. I'm excited to go back and see your little pop ups everywhere.
Maybe they'll just show up, you know.
Okay, so before we take a break, let me ask you, I have two questions for my last guest.
Oh.
So on episode 185, I had on Rick Smilo. He's the president, CEO, and owner of the Institute of Culinary Education.
Oh, I know
Rick. You know Rick?
Yeah.
They have two locations now. They're in New York, and they opened in Los Angeles recently.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, okay. So, first question.
Oh, from Rick Smilo. That's So I really like him. I've known him for a long time.
He's been it was good talking to him.
Yeah.
So, he wants to know, since you're now focusing mm-hmm. much... not focusing as much on sugar mm-hmm. and making pottery and ceramics mm-hmm. for chefs, what chef or restaurant would you like to make custom ceramics for to be used for serviceware?
Wow, okay. That's a very broad question, but do you want to know what my immediate response to something like that
yes.
is? Yes. My yes. immediate response is I like to work with people that that know me.
Okay.
I like to, or that know my work, or that, you know, I like to work with friends. I like to work with people who get me and understand what my work is about, mm-hmm. or if they don't have to know me necessarily, but where they can look at my work and respond easily.
Like you don't have to convince them. Yeah. Or to like get to know me. Like they already know you.
Yeah. Or it really is, or they get my approach to making ceramics, which is at this point, not, you know, each piece is different. They're all really individually made, you know, they're mm-hmm. all hand built. I'm the only one who touches them. I'm the only one who makes them. I work fast. That's why there's so much of them. But it's a very particular way of working. And until I can, I don't know. I was going to say until I can figure out a way to make them, to have them mass produced, which I just don't want to do. It'll happen. Right. I don't know. Ask me in a few years.
Okay.
Whatever.
Okay. We'll but, see.
So, okay. So I, you know, and chefs with great taste. but I like to make family yeah. style things. Like I want to make like big bowls, like huge bowls for like pasta for 20 people.
Well, I'm just thinking right now with your legacy records, those guys have more than one restaurant. You could be making something for their pizzas, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Got. Yeah. I mean, as more give you more to do.
Yeah, I'm very busy right now. I have it's funny because I have mostly. Private clients at this point who, you know, I'm doing like full sets of dinnerware for a few families, which is very new and working in yeah. sets and, you know, I'm still figuring out the collection right. and it's always changing. So, but you know, it's a shop. It's an open studio. You can come in and there are things for sale, and you can also just come in and just see what I'm doing. And there's always new work being done. So,
and you're on West 47th in
yes,
Hell's Kitchen.
I'm on between 10th and 11th, right across from
Sullivan Street Bakery.
So
that's good. Okay. Okay, so one more question before we take a break from Rick. He wants
did
to...
Did I answer his question?
You did answer That's his question. Question. You didn't really give us a name, but to be...
Oh, you
to
know.
Be,
well...
People will just have to keep tabs on you.
For all those chefs, if you're listening and you're and you know who I am and you know I know you and you know I know that we... You know who you are.
You know who
you are. Call me. Let's do something really cool. I want to do really cool stuff. I don't need to just make like just the dinner plates because there are so many other beautiful.
Nothing you're saying is surprising me. Yes, and you really? Do, and you will. I'm no, of course, yes. Okay, so of here's the next question of your cake works. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick a favorite. What was the theme, client, or occasion? I know favorite's a very hard thing to answer, but yeah. what's a memory of a cake you made that you would like to give a shout out to?
Well, there are a few. I mean, and one of them, the project of the 2000, you know, that number comes up, the 2000 cakes I made for a royal wedding in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Did you say the 2000 number? No, maybe not.
What did I? Yeah, I did. I said.
Yeah. So that number seems to come up.
2000 cakes for a royal wedding.
Right.
In the Middle East.
The 2000. So 2000 cakes. 2000 cups. That's a lot of cakes. So that was an incredible experience in decorating the, you know, finishing the cakes in the Queen's Ramadan tent.
Awesome.
So that was a great project. You know. You know, there are just certain cakes that, you know, some of the, like, you know, the making Marilyn Manson's wedding cake was a lot of fun in the castle in Ireland. But then some cakes are just for just regular people and they're just normal people. And some of my favorite pieces, and they're kind of just these little moments. And I have a photograph. Yeah. And then also the 30-foot the cake. With the fireworks exploding out of it.
Oh yeah, that little one.
Yeah, that was for the Googa Mooga festival. In,
oh wow!
Yeah, I know the faded Googa Mooga. Those guys are so great. It was not an easy thing for them, but it was great for me.
Well, I need a whole other show as to how you actually do this, but we're going to take a break and then we're going to come back and we're going to play my speed round game and we'll talk a little industry news.
Ooh.
It's all in the industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This week, it's the season finale of Meet in 3. We're following up our episode about youth with a look at age and how aging affects life on farms and in kitchens.
At the most basic level, we need people to grow food for a growing global population.
The question of planning for retirement or old age as a cook, it's almost one that doesn't exist bizarrely until it's too late.
We also have a story about a food that might be older than you think.
A recent archaeological finding might have CrossFitters everywhere reevaluating their diets.
Plus, a story about one of Atlanta's most historic and risque landmarks.
There are dancers that have been there 20 and 30 years.
Don't miss our season finale of Meet in 3, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Margaret Braun. It's time for my speed round game. So what this is I name a couple of things, such as chocolate or vanilla, and you pick your preference.
Oh, okay.
So I give you choices.
Okay.
Okay, so here we
can
go.
Can I? And
yeah, you want chocolate or vanilla as a trial? Or what?
Let's see. Oh, chocolate.
That was okay. Good, right? You're very, very good.
I'm pretty sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I'm going to be real good at this one.
Okay. How about, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Oh, my goodness. Eat out, but eat in the country.
All right.
That's fair. I mean, I'm always going to mess with it. But I will.
First.
I like to eat.
Love it.
Eat inside my eat in my cabin.
Okay.
In the Catskills, but eat out in New York City because it's so awesome. Or any other place. Okay.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
I think I'm kind of like, you know, s- That's a tough one.
There's a whole other meaning of for you.
I'll tell you. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I love small plates so much, but I think I might be at the tail end. I think I might be moving back into big plates. I just think family style, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to look at a big plate of food. I want everyone to stick their forks into it and eat it. So small plates if it's not too precious. Not precious. So if the question were like precious little thing or awesome big mess, I'd say awesome big mess.
That's fantastic. How about communal table or chef's counter?
Depends on the chef and the restaurant and maybe communal table. I don't know. It depends.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, chef's counter is great, but it can't be stuffy. It's got to be like fun. I don't like it to be like, the holy grail of this moment.
Fun chef's counter or fun communal table.
But fun, yeah, as long as fun it's fun. Chef's counter.
Okay. What? Well, we'll move on. I got a few more.
I told you I'm really sharp.
No, you are very sharp. This game is different for everyone.
I'm not. I'm always like I'm that always person. I'm always like going not in another direction.
Okay. This one always stumps people. Tipping or all inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Okay.
I don't quite understand the whole conversation about why tipping is why all inclusive. I don't understand the ins and outs of that. So maybe if I understood it better, I would have more informed opinion. But I like tipping because, and I just think you have to tip really well. You know, Nora, I think it was her last book. It was kind of like a list, and one of the things she said that she wished she had done in her life is she wished she had tipped more. Okay. And that's always good to know. Always tip more.
It's a good tip.
Yeah.
Okay, this one you're probably not going to like, or maybe, I don't know. Mm. Working with sugar or working with clay?
Well, right now, working with clay.
Yeah.
But I love sugar, and I'll go back to sugar. You know, no, goodbye is not forever. Just a little breaky from the cakey.
How about working with, like, in black and white or color?
Oh, good question. I would say right now, black and white. My work, I was the color cake maker. I was, no more white wedding cakes, and I love color. Right now, I've just been sort of paring down, bringing a little bit of color back into my ceramics, but right now, black.
Okay.
And my drawings are black and white. I like black and white.
Yeah.
Touch of orange.
I like the orange you use. It's such a dynamic orange. I don't know. It's
just
great
pops,
orange.
Right?
It pops.
Like a little bit of gold,
It's a good. Yeah. Okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Oh, dessert. I can eat cheese throughout the meal, before and after. I can have cheese plate, but then I need dessert after the cheese plate. Cheese plate, then dessert.
Okay.
Okay.
Manhattan or Brooklyn? That's the last one.
Oh, Manhattan, but because I have a rent-stabilized apartment in the West Village, so of course.
Lucky.
But, lucky me, but if I didn't, I'd be in Brooklyn in a heartbeat. I love Brooklyn. I'm the only person who lives in Manhattan.
I live in Manhattan.
You too?
I do.
Where? What neighborhood
are you? I'm in by Columbus Circle.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's why.
That's why I said I'm near your artist friends. Sculpture art. I have no excuse. But I love your neighborhood. West Village is my favorite.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I've been there a long time. I'm a West Village girl. Yeah. And working in Hell's Kitchen is a whole new world, and I love it. Hell's Kitchen is awesome. There's a screen repair. Have you noticed there's a screen repair store on West 47th Street? A screen repair. Just think about that for a minute.
I've probably walked by it, but I honestly didn't
think about what that entails. That much screen repair.
Thought, but I
could even leave this interview just like for all of you at home. Just think about that. Screen repair.
Okay. So
Let's talk about one bit of industry news here. So yesterday, Bon Appetit magazine came out with its top 50 nominees for America's Best New Restaurants 2018. Mm-hmm. This is the list that Andrew Knowlton puts together every year. He, you know, travels around the country and he finds these gems. And then on August 14th, they'll narrow it down and they'll come out with a hot 10. So it was it's a great list, and I will give a shout out to one of my clients made the list, the Line Hotel, which is in D.C. He, for one of the 50, called out all three of the restaurants in the hotel, which are Brothers and Sisters, Spoken English, and A Rake's Progress. And I'm working with Eric Bruner-Yang, whose Brothers and Sisters and Spoken English are his concepts. So it was really exciting that they're on the list.
That's fantastic.
It's great. In New York, there were three places. There was Frenchette, which I love, great restaurant. Cervos, which is down Lower East Side, and this place, Ugly Baby, which I've been to in Brooklyn.
Ooh, Ugly Baby is good.
Good Thai food.
Yes, it's a really good Thai food. And it's great. And they have really good splashy art on the walls. And all the kitchen staff and the wait staff is so gorgeous and adorable. Like boys and girls, both in hot pants.
Yeah, well, okay. So, I don't know. Do you pay attention at all to these lists, or do you care?
I honestly, I don't pay attention to those lists so much. I think I have an odd place in the industry, because I haven't really worked in restaurants so much, but I know chefs and I eat, and I don't know what to say.
Well,
I just like to eat out, and
but you're not are you the one? I'm the one who's, I make the plans, the restaurant reservations, I would say 99% of the time for whoever I'm dining with, whether and are you the person? Are you more the person that you're going out with your friends in the industry, but they're picking the restaurant?
Great question. Well, you know, Kate Crater is like...
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Kate knows where...
I know.
...has a list.
And, you know, so when you talk about lists...
Right,
And Bon Appetit, you know, who like... Oh, it's fantastic. It's a gorgeous magazine. I mean, Adam Rappaport has killed it. But, you know, Kate is like my best friend.
Right.
So I just like, I have been so lucky that I just kind of, I'm be like, you know, like we just.
You're going to go.
We're going to go
Kate,
here.
Kate
we're going to go
gonna,
there.
Kate is going to lead the way.
I know. And she's the queen. She's the reigning queen. She always really will, is. Even though she's not a food and wine.
Well, she's at Bloomberg and doing amazing things.
But she's her own
things.
Thing. Kate's just Kate, man. She's just, she owns the city. And so I feel like, you know, I just have friends and, you know, Kate and then other people and we just kind of go out and have great meals together, and we're so lucky, aren't we?
We are lucky. Yeah, very lucky. And congratulations to everyone who did make this list. You can go to Bon Appetit's website and check it out, and we'll see who he picks as his hot 10.
I just want to say, you know, I don't, it's not like, oh god, I don't, you know, I haven't read it, but you know, but
oh, no.
I think it's great, and I probably should read more of those. But I'm bad. I live under a rock. I make stuff. That's all I do. It's I just work
an
and make things.
Okay, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience, and we'll have the final question. This is All in the Industry and Heritage Radio Network.
Yay.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Lou Cully. Here's the rundown. The location, 575 Henry Street, Brooklyn, New York. The concept, it's a pizzeria known for its thin crust pizza. It's also known for a 2 hour plus wait because it's so popular. The chef and owner, Mark Iacono. Why did I go? Because I hadn't been to Lou Cully's in years and I felt I was due for a revisit. So my experience. A couple weeks ago, it was a Sunday afternoon, I went over to Brooklyn. I actually had lunch at this place called Pilot, which is this really awesome schooner on the water where I had great seafood. You have this Manhattan view. It was awesome. And it was such a nice day. I decided to stay out in Brooklyn, and I realized Lou Cully was nearby. So I went over there right when they opened, which was about 5:45. And there were already people waiting. There was already a list. There was already, I was quoted a 3 hour wait, literally. And I was like, I'm going to do it. I mean, I have my laptop. I'm here. There's city bikes around. Like I can make good with my 3 hour time. So I gave them my name and she took my number and I did just that. I just did stuff over 3 hours. Actually, about 2 hours in, I got a text from the restaurant saying that my table was ready. So I biked over to the restaurant. I got my table. I had a really, really great meal. My server was lovely, took great care of me. On the way to the bathroom, I met Valentino, which was a chef who apparently has worked there like a dozen years, and we had a nice little chat, and I didn't have a David Beckham sighting, though, which I was a little disappointed about because I know he's a regular there. But beyond that, I had a really amazing time. So what did I get? I had a large pie with fresh basil. They only have one size pie. So as a solo diner, you just got to go with the large. And then because I was there and I had waited hours for the table, I overordered and I got a small calzone with pepperoni because I wanted to try it. So my take, delicious, fabulous pizza. It's just great ingredients, great crust, and the calzone, which has this creamy ricotta cheese in it with the pepperoni, and it was delicious, and it had a tomato dipping sauce on the side. So, and I obviously took leftovers to go. The ambiance, it's rustic, candlelit, intimate. I think it's a very, like, sexy ambiance for a pizzeria. I'd say it's perfect for pizza lovers who are willing to wait it out. Interesting tidbit, Lou Cully opened an outlet in my hometown of Miami. It's located on Miami Beach's Sunset Harbor neighborhood. This opened in 2013, and it's run by the chef's cousin. Personal fun fact, many, many years ago, I had a client on Henry Street right down the block from Lou Cully. It's called Crave, and it ended up turning into a catering business, but back then was the first time I went there. And the cost was $42. That is including tax, not including gratuity, and they're cash only. They're also BYOB, just FYI. Would I go back? Yes, when I'm craving pizza and willing to wait. Website is lucully.com. Have you been there?
I love
Lou You've Cully. Probably been there with Kate, and Kate probably just gets you right in.
Well, it's great. And my question is, did you eat the whole pie?
No, I had like two slices and I took the rest and some of the calzone.
What about the calzone?
No, it's big. I mean, it's not really a place for a solo diner in the sense of they're not, it's a very small menu. It's calzone and pizza. That's it.
Yeah. And it's a very social kind of hopping atmosphere.
Yeah.
The BYOB thing is great. You can just drink some really good wine.
Yeah, but I say it's not perfect for solo, but at the same time, I had a really good time, and my server treated me extremely well, and I felt comfortable. You know, it wasn't like they didn't want me there taking that two top. I waited for my two top. I earned it.
Mm-hmm. So good. No, good for you. I love dining alone.
It's too much food. You can't get a small pizza, which is of course what I would have ordered if it was an option.
Yeah,
but it's really
the whole pizza.
Okay,
it's
delicious pizza.
Oh, it's so good.
So, anyways, I say it's worth waiting for. I mean, they take your, the thing with weights, they take your number. You know, you don't have to physically wait there. Yeah. So I kept busy.
Oh, and everyone should go to Lucali because it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Great pizza. Okay, so time for the final question. Mm. My next guest is Charles Billy Lee S. We're going to say his last name.
Okay, no, possibly. That's what we're going to talk about.
We're going to talk about that. Well, first, let me say who he is. He's the founder and CEO of Souvla, which is a fast line Greek restaurant with locations in San Francisco. So, Margaret, what would you like to ask Charles?
Well, first, I want to talk about how we're going to pronounce his name. So, and I'm looking at it now. I have my glasses on. It is, it looks like it's Billy Lies. It isn't. Billy, I think it's Billilius. Billilius, is it? Is it Belilius? Belilius? I'm speaking with Greek accent.
I want to know because I don't want to say my guest's name wrong. So that I will definitely ask him your question.
Okay, so that's no, but that's not the question. The question it's there might be two, and it has to do with Greek food and the and Greek drinks. Retsina is the first question because I have this love-hate relationship with Retsina because it's kind of disgusting, but it's also kind of delicious. So I want to ask him, what do you do? What makes a good Retsina? What makes what makes the gasoline Retsina, and what makes a drinkable Retsina, and what should we eat it with?
Okay, fantastic. I'll find out.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
That's the show.
Yay. This is fun, Sherry.
This is so fun. I wish we could just keep chatting.
Welcome back. There's so much to talk about.
So much.
We just covered so little ground. There's so much.
Well, we got through. We did get through stuff.
Yeah.
And you're incredible. I'm glad that I met you so many years ago, and we've somehow managed to stay in touch.
Yeah.
And that I wish you just much more continued success. I know you know, I feel like you put your heart into what you do, and so that you know, bring success.
That's my impression. You have to do what feels right.
Yeah.
You have to do what feels right. And it seems to be working. You know, not that it has always been easy, but it's a good time now. So come back and visit me at the
I will. I'm not that far away.
Good.
So, thank you. My guest today has been Margaret Braun. She's a pioneering cake designer and the author of Cakewalk, whose work transcends edible media to sculpture, illustration, design, and ceramics. Her website is margaretbraun.com, and you can follow her on Instagram, and you're also, I think, on Twitter, at sugarbraun.
That's it.
You can follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites, BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks again to Margaret. Thank you to my engineer today, Matt. And thanks to my listeners. I'm Sherry Bayer. I will be back next week with another live show. I hope you'll tune in then. And have a great week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Buddy,